Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, delivering lunches to Maine's medical workers all this month to thank them for their dedication. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Maine Public's Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. President Biden's $1.9 trillion pandemic aid package is making its way through Congress, even as political opposition to it is hardening. Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins, who has tried to negotiate a smaller package with the White House, now says she'd be surprised if any Republicans vote for it. The Biden administration insists the package has to be big to do its job. And now we're beginning to see how big. Steve Missler, we've had a look at how much money Maine could get if this package becomes law.
That's right, Erwin. It's about $1.6 billion, which is a few hundred million dollars above what Maine received in the very first COVID relief bill. And to be clear, this is an estimate based off a spreadsheet produced by the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. It's part of this $350 billion aid package that's specifically designed for state and local governments. And it's a provision of the Biden administration's overall relief bill that you previously mentioned. If approved, Maine's share of those funds could be divided between the state government and direct aid to municipalities. It's basically a 60-40 split. So the state would get roughly $1 billion and the rest would go to the localities. Now, this money may come with some strings. It's not quite clear what those strings are yet. The language has not been out there in the public realm anyway. Just as the original COVID relief bill did last year, there were strings and limits on how money could be spent. But generally speaking, the money is basically designed to make states whole after seeing dips in revenue and increased expenses related to the pandemic, expenses like testing agreements, vaccination rollouts, and so forth. But depending on the final language, the money could have an impact on Governor Janet Mills' two-year budget proposal, which the legislature is beginning to comb through. And at the moment, it's the supplemental budget that's the focus because of the ongoing debate over tax relief on pandemic loans.
There's a lot more money coming into the state of Maine than the $1.6 billion. For example, extension of unemployment benefits alone will bring in hundreds of millions of dollars. Extension of the Paycheck Protection Program, again, hundreds of millions of dollars. We haven't seen those numbers yet. Direct payments to hospitals and other healthcare providers. If you look at the scope of this bill and compare it to the CARES Act from last spring, we're probably talking more than the $7 billion of economic aid that flowed into the state. We have just scratched the surface of the economic impact of this package if it is passed.
Well, and as we saw with the CARES Act funding, I mean, and some of the other funding approved last spring, I mean, Governor Mills was still doling some of that out this year. So this impact could last for quite some time.
We don't know what the strings are going to be. Are they going to have to spend it all within federal fiscal year 21? Well, that's a big difference from spreading it out over a longer period of time.
Do we have any idea, Steve, what the governor would like to do with the extra money?
Well, they're not really saying, Erwin. I did ask them about it this week. It was specific to this state and local aid that could come. They were basically saying, look, we're eager to see what's in it and what strings are attached. But, you know, there is this debate that I referenced earlier over the Paycheck Protection Program and this conforming with the federal tax code that would basically provide a double benefit to businesses that received loans through that program. And now, if you recall, Governor Mills' original supplemental budget provided partial relief to those businesses that received those loans. But she was reluctant to provide full relief because it would cost the state about $100 million. And that's money that the state doesn't have without making programmatic cuts, at least according to the Mills administration. I think Republicans have a different view of things. But, you know, Republicans and business groups went ballistic that this, you know, conformity was not part of the governor's original supplemental spending plan and basically blamed Mills for not supporting Maine businesses and giving them, you know, the same double benefit that the federal tax code does on these PPP loans. Well, Mills came out a few days later with a plan to provide tax relief to about 99% of the businesses that received these loans. You know, businesses that received more than $1 million loans, which would include our company, Maine Public Broadcasting, would only receive a partial tax benefit. That has not satisfied legislative Republicans who want all the businesses to get the full benefit. And that's where this slug of money could, and I emphasize the word could, because again, we're waiting to see what the strings might be, but that money could help settle the dispute. Now, Mills is not banking on that. And I think it's probably a smart move politically not to, because we don't know, A, what strings are going to be attached, and B, when it'll arrive. I mean, Democrats are targeting March 10th for final passage and signing of this massive relief proposal. That date just so happens to coincide with the scheduled legislative sessions here in Maine that could include votes on the supplemental budget. I mean, the legislature is coming back on the 10th and the 11th for some votes on bills that are coming out of committee, which may include that supplemental budget. So the timing could work out. We just have to wait and see.
This goes through, as I mentioned at the very top, too. The other thing that seems to be happening is it's looking increasingly like Democrats are going to just try to pass this through reconciliation with their own votes. There doesn't seem to be a lot of movement towards any kind of a grand compromise. Senator Collins, in fact, said this week she doesn't think any Republicans are going to end up voting for this.
Well, I think that's true. And you have to look at, you know, if you want to play the blame game, the Democrats have refused to come down from the $1.9 trillion and criticize the Republicans for not going up from $600 billion. Well, I mean, come on, guys, this is politics. If you really wanted to compromise, you'd come down somewhere in the middle, probably about $1 trillion worth of a package. But that's not happening.
I think Democrats, generally speaking, were reluctant to negotiate with Republicans on this because they were worried about a repeat of the 2009 stimulus episode, where there was a lot of outreach by the Obama administration to get moderate senators like Senator Collins, for example, on board with their stimulus to get us out of that recession. Monday morning quarterbacking of the resulting bill was that it wasn't enough. It didn't do what it was supposed to fast enough. And that actually ended up hurting Democrats in the subsequent midterm elections because the economy was still just sort of lagging along. Right now, the proposal is pretty popular. You know, across the country, you're seeing Republicans support it. At the local level, you know, Republican mayors, Republican leaders, et cetera. You're not seeing that in Congress, probably because it's more of a strategic fight about the midterms than it is actually about whether or not they think this is enough money or too much.
And it's interesting, on the day we recorded this, the New York Times is out with a front page story that quotes a Trump supporter from Northern Maine as supporting this package. It appears that it genuinely is pretty popular with people for probably the obvious reason. I mean, it's been a tough year for a lot of folks and money will be welcome.
$1,400 checks direct to people. It's hard for people to be upset about that.
There's also, of course, a lot of money that's earmarked in this bill for city and town governments. And I imagine, Mal, that will also help ease a lot of pain if it indeed comes to pass.
I think that you're right on the target there. The question is, again, we don't know what the strings are going to be with that particular money. But you could look at town after town, city after city, who has been holding down expenditures, not paving roads, not fixing things, suddenly having enough money to do all of those things, which in itself will help the economy.
The needs are unique. Just like the towns themselves. For example, right here in Augusta, they're losing tons of money, millions of dollars on the Augusta Civic Center because it's just sitting there. Well, that costs the city of Augusta millions of dollars, and they're looking at a $2 million hole in their general fund budget. Well, conceivably, this money, this slug of local aid could help a city like Augusta. Again, as Mel pointed out, depending on what the strings are.
Let's switch gears to another subject. Part of Senator Susan Collins' appeal to centrists in Maine has been her support for LGBTQ rights. But now, Steve, we're hearing that she's not going to co-sponsor a measure to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identification. So what's going on here?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Erwin, we have more questions than answers here. But here's what we know. Senator Collins was a co-sponsor of this bill in the previous Congress, and she was championing its passage as recently as last summer. But this week, she told the Washington Blade, which is a LGBTQ news publication in D.C., that she is no longer co-sponsoring the bill. The reason is a bit murky. I mean, Collins told a reporter from the Blade that she wanted some changes to the bill, but she didn't really specify what they ought to be, and she hasn't and subsequent media reports. And then there was this line in the Blade story that seemed to imply that Collins was taking a swipe at the Human Rights Campaign, which is a leading advocacy group for LGBTQ causes. The Human Rights Campaign endorsed Collins in 2014, in part because she came out in support of same-sex marriage. I mean, she's, you know, one of the first Republicans to have done that. And she had also had spurned efforts to ban same-sex marriage. Then the Trump years came and groups like HRC became really uncomfortable with Collins' votes for conservative judges. And then last year, during Collins' reelection campaign, HRC decided to endorse Democratic challenger Sarah Gideon. So this line in the Blade story seemed to imply that Collins was yanking her co-sponsorship of the Equality Act because a major LGBT group had endorsed her opponent. Well, that line has actually been removed from the story, presumably after some pushback from Collins's communication staff, but that didn't stop the speculation. Collins received an endorsement from the Maine Christian Civic League last year, and the league has been long opposed to extending protections for LGBTQ people because it views those protections as an infringement on religious rights. In fact, the Civic League just this week was sending out action alerts calling the Equality Act one of the most dangerous pieces of legislation ever to come before Congress. So there's a lot swirling around here, but not a lot of concrete facts at the moment. I mean, at the end of the day, though, we have three members of our delegation that are supporting the Equality Act or are co-sponsors of it. Collins hasn't actually said how she'll vote on it. She's just yanking her co-sponsorship.
Well, finally, let's go back to money for a minute. There is a special election to fill a state Senate seat. Those campaign finance taps still appear to be wide open.
Yeah, and the money we're talking about here is not the money spent by candidates, which are Republican William Garrett and Democrat Craig Hickman. But the money spent by outside groups, in this case, caucus and party organizations, is pretty significant. I mean, it was $150,000 as of this week. And that's not quite as much as some of the most heavily targeted races of legislative contests last year, which ranged between $200,000 and $300,000 in outside spending. But it's in the ballpark. This is a vacant seat that will not change the balance of power in the Maine Senate. Democrats have a 21-13 edge there, but the partisan groups are still putting a lot of energy and resources into this thing. I'm not sure exactly why, but it is a substantial amount of money for a seat that, you know, will have a minimal impact in terms of the balance of power in the Senate.
I think you'd see an interesting difference if the vacancy was in Portland. I think you would see the Democrat cruising to election victory with very little being spent against the person. This is a swing seat. It's been a swing seat for decades, and it continues to be. Shetta Bellows, our Secretary of State, who was the senator from that district, will tell you, registration-wise, it's Republican. But she's been able to get elected there twice. And this is what the Democrats are trying to do, is to keep that momentum that they could get a Democrat elected in a Republican registration district. And the Republicans, of course, are pushing back, saying, hey, it's time to get this seat back. So this is one of those, to bragging rights, yeah, probably, but it also goes to the future battles we're going to see to control the legislature.
Yeah, it's kind of an assertion of power sort of thing. Place to demonstrate how good you really are. Yeah,
yep, absolutely.
All right, Mal, Steve, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We update the podcast on Fridays. You can listen or download it at mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear most of it on Maine Public Radio during Sunday's Weekend Edition. And we always have a taste of the political fair Mondays on Morning Edition. You can get more detail from Steve Mistler's newsletter, which is updated Friday mornings. Check it out and subscribe at mainepublic.org. Willis Ryder Arnold produces the podcast. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Join us again soon for Maine's Political Pulse.